Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Amanda Jones. She's been an educator for 23 years at the same middle school she attended as a child. She has served as president of the Louisiana Association of School Librarians and won numerous awards for her work in school libraries. And we're talking about her book, That Librarian, The Fight Against Book Banning in America. Amanda, welcome to the show. It is a real pleasure to be able to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. What finally pushed you over the edge to write the book? Because you have been through the ringer in the last several years. I mean, what finally, I got to get this down in print.
Well, I was actually offered, I was asked if I wanted to write the book, and I hadn't really, I mean, I had played around with the thought, but when I was asked, you can't pass that up when you're offered that kind of opportunity.
Well, I'll tell you, after reading your book, I say you have such a deep love of books. I think it's only a natural step for you to actually put your story in a book so that it could be there in a library.
Yeah, it was. I still can't believe that I actually wrote a book that was published, because I am such a huge lover of books.
And that comes out in this book. Now, I've got to tell you, this is, for the reader, this is a harrowing story that you went through. And it all started, I don't want to say, I guess innocently, like you were at a meeting at your local library board. It was Tuesday, July 19th, 2022. You got up and made a really nice appeal to not ban books. And this whole speech, by the way, is at the back of That Librarian. And then in a couple of days, what happened?
Yeah, so I'm a school librarian by trade, but I just happened to go to this public library board meeting as a resident. I've lived in my community for all 46 years, and I just gave it a speech about censorship. I didn't talk about any books in particular or anything.
Nope.
I just reiterated the policies. Three times I reiterated that we already have policies in place. And 4 days later, I woke up to this horrific smear campaign saying I was teaching, I was advocating for sex acts with children. I was giving pornography and erotica to six-year-olds. And it circulated hundreds of times in my community.
The story of it seems almost like just a nightmare, like that it couldn't possibly be real. But as you find out from reading your book, it is all too real. The things that you were being accused of were just incredible. First of all, the word grooming, which is a code word, that was used a lot. You were training through your library preteens and children into oral sex, anal intercourse. It was insane, crazy, and very violent. I mean, people were making threats on you. And what was your initial reaction to getting all these emails?
I mean, I stayed in bed for several days and cried to the point that my eyes swelled shut and my sinuses closed up and I couldn't breathe through my nose.
But that's a normal, I think that's a normal response, actually. It's a horrible response, but it's a normal response to what you're getting. I mean, this is coming out in your email.
Yeah, and the sad thing is that these are people in my community. We're in a small town, so these are people that I know, that I've known my whole life, that I thought were, some people were friends of mine.
Yeah, I know, I know.
And they all joined in. It was horrific.
Well, let's take a moment and backtrack and talk about the town. Describe for me, you do that wonderfully in the book, what this town, this is the town you grew up in, isn't it?
Yes, it's a very small town in Louisiana, and, you know, we have, we're not even really a town. We're unincorporated village. We have two red lights. Yeah. And I've lived there my whole life, and I've worked for 24 years at the same school that I attended when I was in middle school. And I work with kids. Well, they're not kids anymore. Adults that I taught when they were kids. And I have grand students, which are kids of my former students. And I thought we were all a very close-knit loving community.
Some of the most vocal and repetitive people who are making these horrible posts didn't even live in the area, right?
Correct. It was all started by an outside extremist group. It's a dark money nonprofit, and they do this in libraries all across Louisiana. They just didn't expect such resistance from our community, and so they got mad about it, and they targeted the most outspoken, which was me.
What's amazing about it is, from the beginning, their ignorance is absolutely incredible. They obviously have a tremendous sort of antipathy towards the LGBTQIA plus community. But it wasn't just that. It was also later it turns into things about race. I mean, they obviously had never been to a library before because they didn't know that there was a children's section. And then there was usually there's other older sections. And they were naming books that weren't even in the collection.
Yeah, and it's exacerbated by our current governor, who was the time attorney general. Yeah, and he put out this like Protecting Innocence Project report, and it listed these 10 books that he claimed were in children's sections in our libraries, and they're not. They're all in adult nonfiction, or they're in older teen nonfiction. But people were using these books, and we only had 3 of them in our libraries, and they were all in the adult section. But from the posts on social media, you know, they were insinuating they were in the picture book section next to Green Eggs and Ham, and that is just not true. We have, you know, trained professional librarians who put the books in the, if we even have them, in the appropriate sections of the library. So to insinuate there's any kind of sexually explicit material in children's sections is just not true. And when you look at the books that they're challenging, it's books like Pride Puppy about a little puppy in a parade. It's nothing, there's nothing sexual in it whatsoever.
It's incredible. I mean, I want to trace back to your initial reaction. I mean, did you engage them initially in conversation thinking that you could sway them?
No.
Okay. No, I have never. Good move.
No. I don't negotiate with toddlers and terrorists. And these are people that are, you cannot, they're there to do a job. The dark money nonprofit is there to do a job, and it's to cause chaos on purpose. It's what this man is paid to do. And there's no arguing. And besides that, he's not even from our community. He doesn't live or work in our community. And I've never once, not online or in person, engaged with any of these people whatsoever.
Now, did it become obvious to you from the get-go that they've not read these books at all?
Oh, yes. Very obviously, I haven't read any of these books. They go through and, for one thing, they tend to target picture books and graphic novels. And my theory is that they only want to look at pictures. they don't. It's obvious they don't read these books at all.
And so, what's your recourse for doing this? Now you have a daughter, and my first concern would be for my son or daughter, and did she know about your harassment all along?
Yes, because she was 15 at the time. She's 17 now. She is on social media. So, you know, when something is shared, it's my face. It was a meme of my face saying horrific things on top of it. Yeah. I had to sit her down and talk to her about it. And it was very embarrassing to show her these things. So far, so good. She has not been harassed at school or anything. The good thing is that she tends to, her friends are part of the community that I'm trying to protect. So she gets a lot of support from her friends. But yeah, it's been not a cakewalk for my husband or my daughter.
Well, you as you write in the book, there were times definitely when you were afraid to open the door. I mean, you thought that people were going to come and shoot you, essentially.
I mean, I'm still afraid of that. We got security cameras. I got dashboard cams. It's you know, I get confronted in public. I get told that God is going to put a millstone around my neck and drown me. I need to read the Bible. People have posted online that I need to be purged, slapped, killed. I don't go out in public anymore.
Now, important to to reinforce to the audience, you're a very religious person. You were raised a Baptist.
Yep, Southern Baptist, and I'm a registered Republican.
You were. Are you still?
Yeah, I were. I w- um, I am still technically a registered Republican, but I will no longer vote for members of a party who are doing what they're doing right now.
It's amazing because one a part of the book, and I don't want to go through the whole story, really is a revelation of your political evolution. Let me put it that way. And you confess a lot about that, about your education and what you learned and how you how different things changed your mind, especially about racial and social justice matters. I mean, you really go over that in the book, and it sounded like you opened yourself up to the different ideas, and you really grew because of it.
I hope I've grown because of it. And I'm still a work in progress, and I'm still learning, but I was raised that we are to love one another. God is love, and we should be a good Samaritan. Mm-hmm. And I'm not recognizing that in my community any longer. I cannot be a party. I cannot be a part of a group of people that can other and marginalize, factions of our community, because we are a community, and we should all, want our community to thrive, and these people don't want our community to thrive. And so, yeah, I learned a lot. They say I'm woke now.
Well, that's cool. At least you're not asleep.
Yeah, that's what I say. I mean, it's better to be awake than asleep. So,
absolutely.
Whatever.
I think some of the most painful stuff was when there were people who you thought were your friends that you end up discovering that they were sort of on board with these harassments.
Yeah, the sad thing, that's one of the worst things, and something I didn't even write about in the book that happened after. I talk a lot about my former school board member, and I call her Katie in the book, and I thought we were friends, and she at one time stood up in front of the school board meeting and said I was one of the best things that ever happened to our community. Flash forward to, a year or two later, she has joined in. With these people to the point that she filed a bill in the Louisiana legislature last year called HB 777 to imprison librarians who attended American Library Association conference. Yeah, and that was they were calling that the Amanda Jones bill. So, I don't understand what people are thinking.
One of the other things that I learned, and although ever since I was a wee kid, I've been using libraries, the local libraries, is that there's the profession of the librarian is a very serious one. And you do a lot of detailing of what a librarian does and doesn't do in the book. And one of the things is, if people had a complaint about a book, isn't there a process by which they can file a grievance?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I put that in the book because I wanted people to understand. We have collection development policies. We take it very seriously. And librarians use professional reviews to determine what books to buy and where to place them in the library. And it is every citizen's right, whether it's a parent out of school or a patron in the community, to file a challenge form. And that's absolutely their right. If they don't like a book or they want it relocated, that is their right. And I agree with that. But just, what we're seeing as people are mass challenging books that they haven't read, and that's not a good faith. They're not doing that in good faith. They're not an actual concerned citizen that has a real issue.
Do you have any sense about why librarians are being picked and challenged so often? Why librarians?
It's the same reason that teachers, educators are being targeted lately. It's the same people targeting educators and librarians, and it's all an attempt of politicians to use us to pander for votes and come in and create these issues that aren't happening so they can swoop in with solutions to problems that don't exist, but also the eventual push to privatize schools. We just see push for charter schools and to privatize libraries.
As you write in the book, these groups are highly organized and well-funded, and the funding comes from out of state probably.
Yeah, it does. And the thing is that a lot of them are these nonprofits, so you can't trace the donors. We have a pretty healthy suspicion of who the donors are, and a lot of them are from out of state and outside of our community.
And there's nothing you can do because it's sort of dark money?
Correct. I filed a lawsuit hoping to get discovery.
That was I thought for sure when I came to that section of the book. You file the lawsuit, you go to court. The people who were the people who the people in question showed up en masse at the court and were making sort of wise ass comments throughout. And I thought for sure it was going to be decided in your favor. How did you feel about that decision?
Well, if the judge had followed case law and precedent, it would have gone in my favor. But she didn't. She's a local elected official who, you know, I have theories on why. And I, you know, I'm headed into the Louisiana Supreme Court. I have appealed. We're going up to the Supreme Court in Louisiana. And it's a defamation lawsuit. And for these men that have said these awful, horrible things that have ruined my reputation in my community. And maybe it'll go my way and maybe it won't. But at least I stood up for myself. So I'm proud.
You should be. My guest tonight is Amanda Jones. She has been an educator for 23 years at the same middle school she attended as a child. I love that. She has served as president of the Louisiana Association of School Librarians and won numerous awards for her work in school libraries. And we're talking about her book. It's a harrowing read. That Librarian, The Fight Against Book Banning in America. You actually went to court twice. And it just didn't seem to make a dent.
No, it doesn't. And that's what happens in local court systems where judges are elected. And, you know, you can trace donors, and a lot of these people have the same donors. And, you know, I'm not saying I don't want to insinuate there's anything in towards with this judge, but, you know, that's got a way in the back of her mind. And, you know, I'm hoping the Louisiana Supreme Court will see reason. But again, you know, I'm going to leave it at that.
Have you found yourself to become more sort of jaded through this experience, more cynical?
Yes and no. I've become very jaded in the fact that people can just be so hateful and spread such malicious lies that are just so unfounded. But on the opposite side of it, the love and outpouring from people, now granted, not from within my community, but from outside of my community has been fantastic. So it does kind of give me hope.
How about support from the librarians? Do you have support from Louisiana librarians?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And not only Louisiana librarians all across the United States. Hundreds have reached out because this is happening not just to me. This is happening to librarians all across the United States.
Yeah, it is. Now, there's a great section in this book about you growing up with books that I just thought was wonderful. And I want to pay attention to that. You grew up in Watson, L.A., Louisiana. Talk to me about the importance of Judy Blume for you.
Oh, Judy Blume. Oh, I love her so much. Judy Blume was, I want to say, it was the first author when I was little that I read her books. And they're all written for children. Well, she has some older ones, but the books I read were written for children. And they tackled such tough topics like racism and anti-Semitism and bullying and puberty. And she wrote them in such a way that kids can understand it. And it just really set the foundation, you know, besides my parents, because my parents did a great job too, but of building empathy as a young child. And I think her books have shaped the way I have grown up to be.
It's and you learned about your menstrual cycle from Judy Blume.
I did.
You know, and people, you know, we're joking about it, but that's a really important thing for a young girl. And a lot of times that stuff is not talked about by parents or anybody else. And to have a written resource that sort of help you along is amazingly important.
It is. And not only that, you can learn from it, but it can also be a catalyst for parents to give their child book and to start the conversation.
Just in general, talk about the importance of books for children, the importance of children reading and not online, just books.
Well, books can be, first of all, with a book, they're not being bombarded by all these hateful outside comments like they are on social media and the internet. But books, you know, have the ability to shape lives and to save lives. People that, you know, especially children who have a really tough home life, You know, we have a lot of kids, particularly in my community, that have parents addicted to drugs, a lot of foster care children, people dealing with bullying and racism and questions about their identity, and they can find answers in books. And books really can save lives. People say that all the time, but I've heard from so many people that said, you know, I was considering taking my own life, and then I read this book.
Right. That comes out several times in your book about how important certain books are for people and literally saves lives. To know that there's a community out there that, that is like you.
I mean, I'm hoping more people will help save the books because, you know, that more people in the community will join in and help before all our libraries are, you know, defunded.
And it's also important, if you're a child who read a lot of books, I did. It's sometimes really important to go back and reread those books that you read as a child. Your attitude towards them may change. There's a great example in your book about the Little House on the Prairie books by Laura Ingalls Wilder. That Little House series, you went back and reread it as an adult and realized it was terribly racially insensitive.
It was. And I will say, I love that series. Like, I grew up with it. I read it, you know, the whole series, start to finish multiple times. And there are aspects of that book that I absolutely love. But reading it as an adult, I look back and there's, you know, it's racially insensitive to Native Americans, African Americans. It's just, and you know, things were, people say, oh, well, things were different then. And yeah, that's true. But we know better now. We know better. And so, you know, I don't know how I feel now about those books.
I know. I have several of those books, too, in my past. Now, you have a great section at the end of this book about what to do in your community if these issues come up. What do you think is some of the most important things that people can do when people start going on a rant about books in the libraries?
Push the truth, but push it with kindness and empathy. Don't join in the hate and mock and belittle like the people that are usually for censorship are doing, because we have to set a better example for the children of our communities that hate is not acceptable. But pushing the truth, and it's very important to follow local school board and library board and, you know, city and county governance and the legislature and know what's happening before it's too late.
You say that's so important. Even if you don't want to speak up, even if you don't find it in yourself that you can speak up, at least know what's going on. So attend these public meetings, even if you're not going to publicly speak.
Yes, and a lot of these meetings, you can file an opposition card without and request it, you know, so that you don't want to speak, but you can file an opposition. So file those or email your legislators or your governing officials. Email them.
And you also mentioned voting is really critical, too.
It is. And I just wrote an op-ed for Time magazine about the importance of this upcoming election.
Yep.
For libraries. And it's very important to vote and look and see what the candidates, presidential and vice presidential, say about libraries and public schools and education in general.
You also mentioned, again, the next time you hear someone say that there are sexually explicit materials in the children's section of the library, first of all, check for yourself and also determine whether these people have even read the book. A lot of times they take stuff out of context.
They really do. You know, I heard recently, I was fortunate to hear author Ellen Hopkins speak, and a lot of her books are challenged and banned because they deal with tough topics like drug addiction.
Yep.
And they, you know, they take these things out of context, but the work as a whole can help someone. When you take one or two sentences out of context to be sensational, I mean, you're just trying to rile people up. Where if, you know, and it's shown that a lot of people that once were for book banning have gone on record to say after they read the book, they realized it wasn't what they thought it was because they read the whole thing. But you have to take the time to read the whole thing before you have an opinion on it.
Now, I want to mention in your book, you have throughout the book, there's all sorts of screen grabs of these things that people have posted about you. And those are just chilling and weird. Was it always like this, do you think? And people just get, because of the internet, people are able to connect with each other more. I mean, were people always this crazy about books in a library? I don't remember that. I don't remember any of that stuff going on as a kid.
No, I mean, there was like a little wave in the 80s. Then there was like a wave when Harry Potter came out.
Oh, I remember that. You know. Yeah, they were teaching kids witchcraft.
Yes. But nothing like it is today. And what I think is what a catalyst for this was that in 2020, when we had the pandemic and we first started and we were all in quarantine, people were using social media a lot more. And then combine that with hateful rhetoric coming from our leaders at the top, it just made it more okay to be so vocally hateful and vicious. And then you spread misinformation online.
Now, are you still committed to living in that community, even though you've had so much stuff happen to you there?
Yes, it's my town, and they will not run me out.
Wow. I'm amazed, but more power to you. I just think it's great. We have literally 1 minute left. There is a tremendous difference, and I just want you to talk about this for 1 minute, between school librarians and public librarians.
Yes. So school librarians, we have a specific age range, you know, in our libraries. So we don't buy books that are not recommended outside of that age range, whereas a public library serves birth to death. So you will have books for all age ranges. However, usually there are different sections of the library, unless it's a very, very small, you know, one room library. They still have sections, though. And so things are divided. So you're not going to see adult books in children's sections ever.
When I grew up, in Watertown, Massachusetts. There was a children's section and then like a young adult section. And then the adult section, you really couldn't just wander into. But I grew up a long time ago when people actually cared about where you were.
It's still like that. And most libraries have policies that say children under, you know, a certain age, like 12 or 13, shouldn't be unaccompanied without a parent.
Yep. Well, I strongly recommend this book. My guest tonight is Amanda Jones. She has been an educator for 23 years at the same middle school she attended as a child. I think that's wonderful. She served as president of the Louisiana Association of School Librarians and won numerous awards for her work in school literature. And we've been talking about her book, That Librarian, The Fight Against Book Banning in America. Amanda, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.